702 Karimus on Twitter at Karima Brown.
Now, former President Jacob Zuma says there is no other person that has suffered as much as he has, both at a personal and political level, and that there's prejudice since the advent of the constitutional and democratic South Africa as he has in the past 15 years. And of course, he's making these comments in relation to the fact that he is facing several charges. In an affidavit filed as part of a High Court bid to have his corruption prosecution permanently stopped, he asked, argued that he has suffered unparalleled treatment at the hands of the National Prosecuting Authority. He says from the inception of the investigation of the arms deal to the date, the prosecution against him is replete with instances of political manipulation and abuse of process by the NPA. He continues to say that he has become a career obsession of some prosecutors whose goal is to secure his conviction at all costs. Well, to talk to us about this case and someone who knows the granular detail of it is, of course, specialist reporter and journalist at TISO Blackstar, Karen Morn. Karen, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Karina.
Now, of course, this is not the first time that President Jacob Zuma is making these claims. This was the basis for dropping the charges against him. Why is he pursuing a strategy that has legally gone nowhere and that he has had to admit, doesn't make any sense? Do you think he's just run out of time and out of rope?
What I find interesting with this is with the permanent stay of prosecution application, he brought application for access to a number of, previously confidential NPA memorandum.
Yes.
And documentation from SARS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what he's now done is that he's very much focused his argument, and I think this is legally and strategically quite smart, on the failure to charge him with shake. So while he does raise issues around the political manipulation that he argues was manifestly evident in the spy tape recordings, his argument now is very much, you should have charged me with shake back in 2003, but you didn't do so because you knew I was being exonerated. I would be exonerated, and you didn't want that. And so now, I had a right to go on trial with Sheikh. I should have been able to cross-examine him. I should have been able to get my version across. And he's arguing that the delay, the failure to charge with Sheikh, and in the subsequent delay because of the search and seizure raids that the Scorpions carried out to secure that 93,000 documents where they put together this quite hard-hitting forensic audit of Jacob Zuma.
Yeah.
He's saying that, that delay means that this case must be dropped now because it's 17 years after the fact. And quite frankly, he says, I should have gone on trial with Sheikh. You can't put me on trial now.
It reminds me very much of, the case of Italy where Berlusconi, for example, was, being tried by the judiciary for many, many years. And it became almost impossible to find him guilty. And he argued and argued and argued. I mean, is the central argument that all of what they have is fruit from the poison tree and therefore it becomes irrelevant? Is it going to matter legally, or is the fact that even if they manipulated the process, that a court of law is still the only place that can decide whether or not Jacob Zuma is guilty of corruption?
Well, I mean, I think that's a pivotal point. Essentially, a big part of his argument is around this issue of delay, that there's been undue delay, that this was unfairly prejudicial to him, that it has forensic implications because how can he remember events that happened, 17 years ago, that you might lose witnesses. He's also hinted that witnesses may no longer be willing to testify, and he's daring the NPA to supply the witness list. But essentially, in terms of the political manipulations aspect, the appeal court pronounced upon that in its ruling on the Nicholson judgment, where it said, Judge Adams said, whether or not, there may be political motives behind a prosecution, but as long as there hasn't been manifest interference with the evidence itself, then that really is irrelevant.
Yes.
And I think the state will draw upon those kind of arguments, and they will draw upon, you know, they will have to, I think the biggest problem is the Bulalani Muka decision.
Yes.
Right at the beginning.
Yes.
They're going to have to explain that. They're going to have to explain why he went against the advice of his own prosecutors. But in terms of this idea of, you know, the constitutional imperative of equality before the law, and, you know, Shamila Batoy herself has spoke about the cancer of impunity. The court that hears this and decides upon this is really going to have to weigh up, you know, the mechanisms of this case and what happened, but also the greater societal question of, you know, where does the line for accountability
yes.
actually stop?
Yes.
You know, and in our country at this time, it's very important that we are, you know, those who are accused or guilty of corruption are brought to justice in a way that sends a signal societally that we are actually serious about tackling the scourge.
And of course, there is no better way than to, of course, go right to the top. A former president on trial for corruption. You know, 17 years later, he used 10 of those years that he was in office, or 9 of it, to try and manipulate the system so that he doesn't get his day in court, even though he constantly publicly said he does. He was called out by several judges for filibustering. That is probably the best way to restore confidence. But can one out of hand dismiss the issues that former President Jacob Zuma is raising regarding manipulation, and of course also the fact that, you know, evidence might not be there, witnesses might not be there?
I don't think you can. I mean, it's such a legally extraordinary situation. We haven't seen a scenario like this with the kind of delays that are in place. And also, again, you know, the inexplicable decision not to put him on trial with Sheikh. And I think that's one of their biggest challenges that they'll have to address. But it is, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk for the prosecution. And I think, you know, the prosecution is aware that it is going to have to take the court into its confidence. And remember, Karima, when you and I were covering this many, many years ago, there
yeah.
was an inherent faith in the NPA. We all
yeah.
believed, you know, these guys are genuinely trying to do a prosecution. Jacob Zuma routinely made these allegations of political manipulation and Thabo Mbeki directing people. But there wasn't really a hardcore sense that there was any kind of strong evidential basis for that.
Mm.
In the wake of the spy tapes where we saw Bulalani Muka behaving in what may be perceived as an inappropriate way in terms of advising on the timing of the charges, and of course, I'm sure the NPA is going to provide a version of that, and the court has found that that was no basis to withdraw the charges against Jacob Zuma. But the NPA is in a difficult position because it vociferously denied any potential political motivation, and then subsequently in 2009 withdraws the charges on the basis of this political manipulation. So Billy Downer is a very difficult situation because ultimately he's going to need to acknowledge that there was this awareness, that there was some kind of fiddling with the timing of the charges because
yes.
of interests of, you know, perceived interests of Thabo Mbeki. He's going to have to play open cards. But he's also going to have to say to the court, in light of all of that, given the Harim's decision, given the fact that there's never been a dispute from Jacob Zuma that we actually have a case against him, do these kind of issues override, you know, the principle of equality before the law, and do they override, you know, the obligation of the NPA to prosecute without fear or favour?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the court must decide.
Now, of course, this matter is being done in KwaZulu-Natal. We have a strong team of investigators. We have people like Billy Downer, who's been on the case from the beginning. But we have a very compromised head of national prosecuting authority in KwaZulu-Natal, Mwiponi Noko. She is seen as a Zuma associate and as someone who's acted in his interest and the interest of that of his family, both his, one of his wives and his sons. What are the institutional guarantees that the NPA can pull this off? If one looks, for example, at the retreat in the Istina Dairy Farm case and also the retreat on Duduzani Zuma, How do you think the dynamic between Mweponi Noko and her political allegiances and the actual team that's running the prosecution is going to be playing out? Because that is a battle that is far from over. I mean, if we watch the Mokgoro Commission, then you can see that Jiba and Mrwebe are fighting for their very lives. And of course, they are the national deputies of Shamila Batoi. And this is an institution that's battered and bruised and whose integrity is into the ground.
I think what you're asking is a really pivotal question, because very much, you know, the kind of disintegration of the NPA started, you know, I think arguably there's evidence that it began, that political manipulation aspect of the NPA began in the era of Muka.
Yeah.
But it was destroyed. The NPA, as you know, in terms of its kind of sense of integrity and its sense of trustworthiness, I think was eviscerated with the removal of Lucy Pikoli, and his suspension and subsequent removal because, you know, of a reluctance to prosecute, you know, the attempt to shut down the NPA's prosecution of Jackie Selebi.
Yes.
And really, he went under oath when he challenged the decision to dismiss him, even though the Jinwala inquiry had found that he was fit for office.
Yeah.
He said that one of the reasons why he had been dismissed by Kgalema Motlanthe was because he was not plausible in terms of the Zuma prosecution, and they wanted someone who would back down on the issue of the Zuma prosecution, and he made that argument. So, you know, the Zuma prosecution is a real opportunity, but also a bit of a curse for the NPA, because much went wrong with this case.
Absolutely.
So
and of course, it's impossible to evaluate the case without looking at the NPA as an institution. I mean, its inception, for example, was that it was trained, for example, by the FBI. It was meant to be prosecution-driven, led so that we can have winnable cases. Then we have an NPA head that goes in front of national television that says, we've got prima facie evidence, but we choose not to prosecute. We go for one person. We have the person sacked. And then, of course, President Zuma calls everyone's bluff you know, begins a takeover strategy of the African National Congress that has landed the country and its institutions in an unthinkable place. Nobody could think that we would be where we are right now as a consequence of this. And the person that opened that door is none other than Bulelani Ngcuka. I mean, how is history going to remember him for the decision that he made? Because that door simply cannot be closed.
Well, this is exactly the point, and that's, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of where the NPA's weak spot on this is. Because why? You know, Karina, like, and Jacob Zuma puts these memorandum before the court where the prosecution said, we do believe that we've got a case for him to answer. Bulelani Ngcuka gets up and says, no, I think it's, you know, we have a prima facie case, but it might not be winnable. And he literally changes the entire history of this country.
Yeah.
Because there is no doubt, I don't think anyone could argue that Jacob Zuma should not have been put on trial with Shabir Sheikh.
Yes.
It's legally extraordinary to say that, you know, you as a former financial advisor are basically corrupting the deputy president as he then was. But by the way, we're not going to charge him.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think that it's very, very important that the NPA does its utmost to play open cards with the court, particularly Downer, because Downer was involved in that. We know he opposed it just as he opposed Mshe's decision on the spy tapes and said this is, you know, that this is the wrong move to make. And, you know, ultimately we saw with the Sheikh judgment that the court at that stage felt that there was, you know, that there was sort of significant evidence that suggested very strongly that Jacob Zuma was involved or significantly implicated or on at least four instances, Karima, had apparently done the bidding of Sheikh and his businesses. Now, you know, it's one of his, of course, arguments is, well, now I can't cross-examine Sheikh on that because he's been so discredited as a witness by both, you know, in that process that I know for a fact that neither defense or the state plans to call him as a witness. This should have happened in 2003, 2005. And we, you know, Bulelani Ngcuka's legacy, unfortunately, is that he literally changed the entire political and arguably the prosecutorial history of this country with that decision.
And of course, making Shamila Batua's job all the more harder. She has this incredible task on her hands to restore the credibility of this institution, to act without fear or favor, and to, of course, prevent political pressure from being exercised on her. And she said she had that conversation with the president when she was finally accepted as the candidate for the post. President Jacob Zuma could well argue that there is people out to get him politically, and that Shamila Batua is again politically motivated to come for him. What is she going to have to do as the head of the NPA to first of all neutralize Norco as an ally of Zuma, but to also make sure that there is a watertight case against the former president that ought to be heard in a court of law?
You know, in a way she's spared, because it wasn't her decision to basically put those charges back in place. It was Sean Abrams. She's got a very strong, competent prosecutor, Billy Downer, but I agree with you, it was completely inappropriate that Norco is put as the leader of that team.
Yeah.
Because it should have been Downer, and I think there may be significant shifts in terms of the decisions that are made around that team. I know for a fact, and we've seen her actually state this, that there's no place in the NPA for prosecutors who are prosecuting for any other reason than the interest of justice.
Yes.
And I understand that there were some tough conversations in terms of her stance on the kind of leadership that she was prepared to work with, because it cannot be, if she is put in a situation with where she is working with compromised leadership,
yes,
she is going into a fight with both her hands tied behind her back.
Absolutely.
In a very likely scenario where, the people meant to be assisting her are actually trying to stab her in the back, which, many may argue is not unlike the president, that the situation that the president himself finds himself in.
Yes.
So she is going to, I think, going to take quite a hard line in terms of the leadership, the deputy directors that surround her. And I would be very surprised if there isn't a move against Norco, certainly in terms of removing her from a position where she exercises the level of power that she currently has. Remember, at this stage, she can choose to withdraw a prosecution in KwaZulu-Natal. She has extraordinary powers in order to make or break prosecutions going forward. She's been hit with incredibly serious allegations and court findings in terms of her conduct in the Johan Boysen matter, which the NPA is also fighting. So I think that the Shamila Batua is going to have to, I don't know,
there's going to have to be a showdown. There's going to have to be a showdown. And the reason why I'm saying this, Karen, is because Norco actually applied for the job. I mean, she didn't see herself as someone who would be disqualified because of what you've just said. It meant that she felt extremely comfortable that she could be in the running and be seriously considered. So that showdown between Norco and Batua is a must. It has to happen.
And remember, of course, that Batua was left the NPA in 2009, at around the same time that the decision to withdraw against Zuma was taken. She is very close to Anton Steinberg, who I understand is now at the ICC. And he was one of the central prosecutors. And she has a background with these people. She knows the case because she was in KZN at the time. So, she's also always had connections with the prosecution. She may have been out of this institution for quite some time, but she is very aware of the issues. And what's so interesting to me is that she's also taken a position that she will only speak to the media 100 days into her term, because she wants to understand what she's dealing with and how to deal with it. And I think strategically, she's made very different decisions in terms of not having the big public press conferences,
yes,
that we saw with Mkholisi Kim Kassana, Sean Abrams and others. She knows that she walks into an environment where there are going to be a lot of people who want to see her fail, a lot of people with very, very particular political interest in terms of who they believe they're serving. She needs to see the lay of the land and she needs to respond. But there is going to be a showdown, and it's not just going to be with Moipona Noko. I think there are going to be a number of other prosecutors affected as well.
Absolutely. That's where we leave it. Thank you very much to Karen Moore and breaking it down for us into granular detail, specialist reporter and journalist at Tiso Blackstar.